avanti.
I don't see you.
Hi, Claire. How are you doing?
How are you?
Hey.
I'm as good as anyone else these days.
James Reynolds is there. Just looking at your paper on games.
My paper on games. Which paper on games?
Oh, I don't know. It's your field. Social skill sets, executive functioning, and how to design a game.
Yes. That was a really cool project with.
All right. Let's see. I can. Oh, there's Dr. Dunty coming on. James, John, Tom Donaldson, the Tories, Sandra Mooney, Mike Suddy, Jeff Wozniak, Claire, Cristiano, and Christy, Jen Thomas, me. Hey, Bill. Bill, can you hear me? Am I having microphone problems?
Sorry, I was on mute.
Oh, it's all right. I know. So, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Hanging in there, you know. Shot an 89 yesterday, so I'm all right. A little rough day, but it was all right.
How many holes was there?
I played a full round. You know, the nice thing here is that the golf course is open. And so it gives me something to do. And Tina's here. And Leah's there. Hi, Leah. Sarah, did I see Sarah Mattson?
She texted me, she's having some connection issues.
Yeah, I am too. Mine keeps coming up with weak connection. And yet it shows that it's pretty good. All right, so I'm looking for Joanne Weinberg, Johan Everhart, Scott Parnell, Ken Jones, Sarah Mattson.
That's here.
Ken's there. Who else?
Scott Parnell.
Johan and Johan. Joanne Weinberg. Tatiana. Sarah. Joe Wang. I think he's there.
I'm here.
Okay. All right. Let me.
Ed, I'm on. It's Michael.
Hey, Michael. Things calming down in Boston?
A little bit. Still crazy, but not as crazy.
Good. Going to be interesting in a couple weeks after seeing some of the social gatherings that occurred over the weekend. So see what happens in another 2 to 3 weeks, I guess. And I just hope they don't lock everything down.
I know it. You know, this thing hasn't gone away, and it's a very clever beast. So our planning is for it to percolate through the summer and then explode in the fall, late summer.
At least so we're planning. Do you think they'll get a hint of that? Do you think they'll get a hint of whether or not it gets worse in the winter by what happens in Brazil now?
I don't know.
I mean, Brazil with influenza.
You know, the flu season starts in Australia, and we're not there yet. So, you know, what we're all planning for and concerned about is the coincidence of flu season and a resurgence of COVID.
Well, it'll be interesting times. All right, so let's get on with this meeting. Yeah. I'm sorry. All right, so we can get on with this. All right, so everybody presumably has the dates for the upcoming Zoom semi-annual meeting. It's going to be Tuesday, June 23rd, from 9 to 11:30 Pacific time. And then 2 days later on June 25th, from 12 to 2:30 p.m. It's going to be basically kind of a recap of what's happened at CFAS since our last face-to-face meeting last October. What I'm asking everyone to kind of do is to come up with a 10-minute presentation that concentrates on your more recent data since your last update. At the same time, I'd like to see what's been accomplished in terms of deliverables, publications, etc. I'd like to know if the virus is impacting your ability to keep on your proposed timeline. Let's see, and then pretty important for me anyway, is where do you think your research is heading for, and I'm starting to think about the next iteration of, and so where your research is heading. And then the next day, I think second day, we're gonna try to talk about a little bit about the future of CFAS in case there is another RFA and priority research areas, not just your own area, but what you think are the important and critical questions that need to be answered, and high priority research areas. So is everybody up for all that? Any questions about that? So in preparation for that second day, what I'd like everybody to do is to email me their ideas, and some of you have already done that, about where you think the next iteration of CFAS, what questions they should address, where they're going. Last time we had some nice themes on genetics as well as e-health, and I think that some of those have paid off really well. So what are the important issues and questions that face the field right now, and how might CFAS direct its expertise to help answer those? What areas should we be trying to recruit people into? Are there people that we should try to get to apply for a project in CFAS? So if you could email me those comments, concerns, issues, I think we can start to formulate where we would go if an RFA was going to be issued. All right, and I'm hopeful of that. Bill, any thoughts? Joe, Bill?
No, I think it's always good to plan ahead. Unfortunately, we can't really say anything right now in terms of whether an RFA will be issued, but we are beginning internal discussions. So I think the plan that you laid out is a good one.
I mean, believe it or not, it takes a while to put all this stuff together and then to get everybody, you know, to select projects, work on budgets so that we're under the cap that they always impose. So if we can get a jump on it, I think that's a good thing. And it does take a while to throw. This is not a 2-month job to put this together. So any help you could give me in starting to outline priority areas would be very useful, and where your research you think would be heading. You know, one thing that we do is, you know, some of these projects spin off and new projects come on, and so we have to make those decisions. So if you could get me that, all right. Also, Jill has told me the June 17th meeting is going to be canceled because we're going to be meeting the following week with that. Jill needs copies of your RPPR progress reports, a notice of grant award, and your current IRB or IACUC approval letters. And we start, maybe Jill might have more comments about this, but on the Google Docs, if things need to change about what type of information you're putting in, we got to let people know too, all right? So, Jill, you have anything on that? You're muted, Jill.
No, I shook my head. No, you're good. That was good. All right. Just
a couple of things. RSA is having its virtual poster session on June 22nd. Is anyone participating in that?
Yes.
That was Sandra?
I am.
Leah is too, okay. You have posters, so you're gonna do the virtual poster things? All right, so then I'll tune in for that. And I just want to announce that Tina is giving a talk on COVID. On June 11th, COVID-19 and pregnancy, what we know and what we, and how will we learn more. And it's from the Birth Defects Research and Prevention virtual meeting. You can register for free online. And I think Jill sent out the link to do that. So, and welcome Sarah Jo. She's now on.
You betcha.
And okay, all right, so I don't know if anyone has any information, but I got a request, and if anyone knows anything, if they could email me about drinking during pregnancy among Latinos. So if anyone has that or information about FASD, specifically in the Hispanic and Latino population, I would appreciate it. And Tina, maybe you have some information on that from the COFAS P study, but someone's requesting that from.
Yeah, I can send you the slide that looks at it by ethnic group.
All right, thank you. And how about on drinking during pregnancy among Latinos? If anyone knows anything on that, I'd appreciate it, because this is someone who's a friend who needs this data for something. All right, now, Bill, I don't know if you can answer this, or Joe. I know the deadline for the UH2s has passed. Do we have any idea of how many applications we got or were received? If that's not confidential information?
I guess yeah, it's confidential.
Right. Okay. The answer is no, I don't know.
Okay. Well, I know a number went in from CFAS, so I hope everybody in CFAS got theirs in time. And I guess we'll just have to wait. The study section, I believe, is going to be in July. So we won't know anything until then. Let's see, what else do I have? All right, Leah, do you have an update on Central Repository for data sharing, whether people are still putting data in or if they have any data?
You know what? I sent my slides to Jill and I'm on a different computer. Do you have them, Jill? I can pull them up. I have them here.
Okay.
Okay. Are you going to share your screen?
It doesn't matter. If you have them, go for it.
Oh, that's good. That's perfect. All right. So the next day to upload is June the 1st. And this is just a broad reminder. Some people aren't collecting data, or because of what's going on, they've kind of paused collecting data. I know that we've stopped sending out saliva kits and bringing in saliva samples. But if anyone has new data, we'd like a new data set on or by June 1st. And you can just export an updated file from REDCap and just put it into your box on the central repository and delete the old file, rename it however you want to organize your folder. However you want to do it is fine with us. I did have a folder for NOFAS, but Jill had a great idea to just kind of make that a more broad folder to put things in that you might want to share with other people in the consortium, with NIAAA, things that Ed might need. That way anyone and everyone has access to this folder, and it's the folder is on the next slide, Jill. If you go to the central repository link.
And I'm not seeing any of your slides.
Oh,
I'm not seeing Jill has them up.
So that's mean. I thought I was looking at my screen, but I thought I was looking at Jill's screen. Sorry. Okay. After teaching for half a semester, I'm still inept at this. All right. A new data set by June the 1st. You can replace your existing file and go back up one. Okay, that's good. We're going to expand the NOFAS folder, which you can see on the next slide. There at the bottom, it's a promotional material folder, and everyone has access to this folder. So you can go into there and you can put slides, any kind of tweet text that you want NOFAS to send out, anything you want Ed to see, NIAAA. Everyone has access to that folder. You can go into that folder and create a subfolder for your study if you want. Sarah can put in anything that she wants to put in for maybe the publications committee, things that need to be done. But that's a folder that hopefully will be useful for other people to pull files from if you have something that you want to share with other investigators or with other people in CFAS. So that's there for you guys to use if you want. And then the last slide. Some of you may have received emails from Indiana University that says we're going to migrate. And we're taking care of it. We're on top of it. Since our data are on a higher level box cloud, we'll be the last ones to do the migration. And Chris Hobbick is in charge of it. We'll have IT people double check all of the data access, the security, make sure that you can access it from outside Indiana University. And once that's all tested and taken care of, then we'll let everyone know how the migration will work and we'll keep you updated. But I just wanted to make sure that you're not alarmed by these email messages. Everything's fine. And we'll keep you updated, but it will be the end of the summer before anything happens. That's my update.
Okay. Sarah, you have an update on publications? Where did she go?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I was muted, and I'm going to try to share. Okay, can you see those? We had a number of concept proposals, and I'll say that I was the only one who put concept proposals in. So we still welcome concept proposals using the Google form. Most of these, or half of these, I'd say, are papers that we're working on right now that are related to the decision tree. So we're excited to be moving those forward. We did get one manuscript submission form. Eileen Moore just recently submitted a paper to ACER, so we're hoping for good news about that. And we didn't have any post-acceptance forms, but we, as we monitor the lists of papers that come out through PubMed, we know that there are a couple that haven't submitted their manuscript acceptance form. So we're on top of that, and we'll get those form submits properly, announce them, and also provide the information to NIAAA and NOFAS so that they can be in the loop on those. So just make sure as your papers are getting accepted that you submit those forms. I know it's a lot of forms. We try to make it as easy as possible. If you have any questions, you can always ask me or ask Jill. I think either of us could help you with that. And that's it.
All righty. Thank you.
Sarah.
All right. So,
yes.
Bill, go ahead. And,
yes.
Got a quick question. So, the concept proposal that you put in, it looked like it was looking at the decision tree related to ARND.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit back about Claire this and one. Tina's recent question? Yeah.
So we are looking at whether we can use the decision tree to detect children who have ARND. So as you probably remember, the decision tree is not really designed to make a diagnosis. Although as part of the UH2 proposal, I just put in, we're expanding the ability of the decision tree, or we're hoping to expand the ability of the decision tree to make more diagnostic recommendations. And one of those is with ARND. And we're approaching it in two different ways. One is to use a tool that we have been collecting for a while called the ARND checklist, which was authored by Larry Bird. And we've been collecting that since the beginning of CFS4 in the hopes that it would be helpful to us in improving our identification. And the second way is by creating an algorithm. So those criteria, so we can use decision. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
no?
Now.
You're cutting in and out.
Okay. Sorry, I have at least two other people using the internet in my house, maybe three, and I had a lot of trouble this morning, so I apologize. Hopefully you can hear me. I'm happy to send her out a summary. Where we created an algorithm that uses decision tree data and translates it into Hoimi language so that we can come up with or identify the children who would meet criteria for ARND using the data that we already have. And so this paper is looking at how we can use the decision tree to detect ARND. And in the UH2 project, we're hoping to formally put that algorithm into the decision tree. It's not yet in the decision tree. It's just something that we do after the fact, and we're testing it now. Does that help?
Yeah, that does. Thanks.
Okay. I'm happy to talk to you about it in more detail if you want.
Okay. I was just going to go through the projects now and see who has anything to offer or about anything new and exciting going on. And I have to say that the administrative core has really nothing to report. Just plugging away, and that's about it here. Ken, I was wondering how things are going with telemedicine in this climate, or are you still seeing patients in clinic? Are you doing any of the telemedicine stuff? Just independent of any research project.
Yeah, we're using telemedicine. Both Miguel and I are using telemedicine to evaluate kids. We haven't started, we're not back seeing kids face-to-face at this point. We are going to start that actually this Friday. Half of my patients in clinic are going to be by telemedicine and the other half by face-to-face. Miguel's doing about the same thing in terms of face-to-face versus versus telemedicine. As far as the research aspect of things, we're pretty dead in the water, actually, because it requires face-to-face evaluations, and we haven't been able to do those over the last 3 months, either here in San Diego. We've had obvious troubles with Jeff's group in Minneapolis, and the same with Claire's group. It's just pretty impossible because it requires, the physical examination requires measurements, which we obviously can't do by telemedicine.
Okay, all right. Well, we may work on that physical measurement thing on by telemedicine, so.
Yeah, well, that would be great, Ed.
I think that our STTR, I think we have pretty good evidence that we can get pretty accurate measurements. So we'll talk about that once we can get together over a bottle of wine somewhere. All right.
Sounds good.
All right. Mike, you have any new information going on? I know you've been real busy with the baby, but. You're still muted. Mike?
You're muted.
All right, yeah. It said I could press the space bar, that didn't work. I'm still pursuing the infant study in the past, and hopefully I'm trying to churn out a paper for pediatrics over the next few months, I'm hoping. That's my goal at the moment. That's me at the moment.
There's a new study just coming out of Oregon on rhesus monkeys and prenatal detection with MRI on those. This guy Kroenke, pretty interesting stuff. I think he has two papers out in the last month on it. So I think he's got some nice data on brain development after first trimester exposure and then looking at brain in third trimester and seeing long-lasting effects. So you might want to see those papers.
Wait, Claire, congratulations, Mike. Mike, congratulations on the accomplishment on your shoulder. That's very cute.
Thank you very much. Yeah, sorry, wife's looking after the toddler at the moment, so I've got to hold this one upright. Otherwise, it goes wrong.
She's adorable. Look at that head of hair.
Oh, so you have a little girl and a little boy now.
All right. Claire, you have any big things on the adult?
Well, adults. Well, we have a COVID problem, as does everybody in the universe, and the university has shut down direct data collection, and we're wrestling with them right now about when we can open up again. They're thinking July, so I hope that that's true. In the meanwhile, we still can continue with tier one data collection, which is questionnaires and things. And as we are speaking, I'm working on a consent form so that I can do part of the tier two process remotely. And so Seattle has already gotten permission to do that
do the questionnaires and so on. But we still have the direct data collection where we have to see them physically that we can't do as yet. I would love it if we could do the dysmorphology, because that's one of the things we had been all set up to begin a collection of the dysmorphology by telemedicine with Ken, and then everything got shut down. So that's in abeyance as yet. Other than that, we've been writing COVID supplements and various other things. One of the big problems with the adult study is that the individuals that we're working with are particularly high risk for the effects of the virus, both socially and physically. Julie Cable's study has found, which is on the same individuals, has been finding very clear evidence of cardiovascular problems, which is a huge issue. And in addition, we're talking about what is called a historic event in terms of validity, threats to internal validity of studies, if anybody of you are familiar with Campbell and Stanley. So this is a huge issue in terms of how it affects the research study. And we're attempting to develop methodologies for coping with that at the moment.
All right. If anyone has any questions, ask, but we're trying to go through these. Tatiana or Leah on the genetics, and we all know that everything is kind of stopped because of COVID, but just if there's any big data. Yeah,
Ed, can I make a request? So as we go through this, I wouldn't mind hearing how, you know, as states are starting to reopen, how if universities are yet providing guidance on how to restart research activities. It doesn't sound like from Claire and from some from Ken that's really happening yet. But
well, Emory is very thoughtfully working on this issue. I mean, but they haven't. It isn't started yet. But they're comprehensively
right.
Setting up a protocol.
I think University of Florida may be making the most active move right now. Sarah Jo.
Well, correct. I mean, there are hours of meetings a week in which the standards and process by which it's going to be worked out. There are working drafts in many institutions about use of the imaging facilities, the face-to-face, and the staged entry. One of the concerns is the point at which the most vulnerable will be brought back. And so if you're dealing with vulnerable populations who are not here for clinical visits per se, they are trying to hold off until they know what increased risk there will be. But it's very, we have to get tested. And if we decline, we go through a regular interview, but I don't know why anybody, but that's a one-shot test. You know, test me in 2 weeks, you know, after I've been over to the beach and hung out or whatever. So.
Anyone else have any things about, I mean, we're shut down, going online. Sarah, you know anything better than that?
Yeah, so I'm on the IRB, and the university is, as Claire said, and Sarah Jo, the university is definitely working towards reopening. First, the university research comes a little bit later, and then research with sensitive populations even later. So there's no set timeline on when in-person data collection with a compromised or child population will happen. So we're just, I personally feel very fortunate that we have as much online work as we do, because I feel like it's going to be a while before we get back. We don't even have the facilities to, you know, they're talking about square footage, 150 square feet per person. We don't have test rooms that accommodate more than one person. So that kind of puts our in-person testing on permanent hold. But we're fortunate in many other ways. And so we're just hoping to keep moving forward on the in the ways that we have been until we can get back in person.
Anyone have any different story?
I just want to add that some institutions, that issue of the square footage for the testing is a way big deal for everyone. And I saw a plan from Sandy Brown the other day on an ABCD call that they have somehow gotten somebody to agree that one person and one participant counts as one person. And so I threw that out to our people today and said, hey, maybe you want to consider that participant not a real person see how that's going to fly. So
maybe it's you that they're not considering a real person.
I'm okay with that, too, for that matter. I don't care.
All right.
Yeah, and it's even more stringent. I mean, the next phase is actually 250 square feet, one person per 250 square feet. So it's going to be a challenge.
All right. I wanted to continue going through these, and because I want to, Bill, you have some comments you want to make. Do you want to do them now so we don't run out of time?
I can. I mean, it shouldn't take. There were just a few links that I had sent Jill, just so that people were aware of some of the NIH-related resources that are being stood up right now. The one that I wanted to make, and some of you might be aware of this, is the NIH repository for COVID-related tools. Since the pandemic began, researchers have been coming up with survey items to assess various COVID-related domains in longitudinal and clinical research. And so the NIH Office of Behavioral and Social Science Research, OBSSR, established two different platforms that researchers can go to and deposit these instruments and measures. One is called DR2, which I think the link was sent around. That's the NIH Public Health Emergency and Disaster Research Response. The other one is the Phoenix Toolkit that some of you may be aware of. So I would encourage anyone, once the research gets going, or if you have COVID-related supplement ideas, that you want to ask COVID-related questions on, consider some of these surveys and other measurement tools. The other item that I sent around was a link to the Pediatric COVID-19 U.S. Registry, which was stood up about a month ago, I believe. And that is a effort being led by the Pediatric Infectious Disease Transplant Network, in collaboration with children hospitals around the country. And they're basically creating a location to capture epi and clinical information about all cases of pediatric COVID-19 in the US. I checked this morning, there are about 1,200 cases that have been submitted from over 100 participating sites. So I would encourage you to help spread the word to your local clinicians and researchers about the sites, especially since we know that in the news, there's been this this new syndrome related to COVID-19. At first, it was called Kawasaki-like, but now last week, the CDC released a new case definition. And it's called multi-symptom inflammatory syndrome in children. So the NIH and the CDC are collaborating with domestic and international researchers to investigate this new syndrome. You're probably aware the patients present with a fever. They have a variety of signs and symptoms involving multi-organ involvement. And elevated inflammatory markers. So now there is a new multi-agency task force that's reporting directly to the vice president on this. NIH is involved. So I just wanted folks to be aware of this. And, you know, we all know that it's been documented by Joanne and other researchers that kids with PAE altered immune responses. So I just wanted to make sure folks were aware of those resources and you know, in the event we do start up on the research activities.
Dr. Jones, do you see any of it at Children's Hospital?
I think there have been two kids that have been thought to have it. Herb, Dad, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't think there's been, I know there's not been any deaths.
All righty. Any questions for Bill?
Just Michael, there's 11 cases right now at Children's Hospital in Boston.
Yeah, we have, I think, 23 in the DC area as of yesterday.
Tina, did you have a comment?
No.
Oh, I saw your thing light up. All right. All righty, any other questions for Bill? Then, Leah, you want to tell us anything great in the project you're doing?
Well, I'm sure we're like everybody else. We kind of were on pause, but our study's online. So our lab is actually opening back up again in a week with all the restrictions and guidelines. So we can start sending out and receiving saliva samples again. So we should be able to get back up and running fairly soon.
Joanne?
Hi there. So we are the same as everyone. We're totally shut down since March 13th. The latest guidelines are starting June 1st. One person from a lab can go into the lab, and I don't know how long that first phase will last. And then the next phase, at whatever point that is, three people from a lab, given the number of people I have, three people could come in, but one person per bench. So that does us no good at all because we can't run assays that way. We have people interacting to run assays. So we have a double whammy. We can't recruit or test right now, and we can't even run samples that we have. And of course, we can't receive blood samples right now either. So we're kind of stuck, and we're very concerned. I mean, things are going to open very slowly, and same as everyone, our population is a vulnerable population as well. So we're thinking that one approach we may try to do is put on a bit of a traveling show and maybe go out into the community, but we'd have to figure out how to deal with blood collection and processing if we're out of our space. If we can get back to Vancouver in time or find another lab near where we are, but maybe try to go out into the community, people might feel safer once we're allowed to even test adults with FASD. Maybe they would feel safer us going out rather than bringing them to a hospital.
Sure.
I think they will be very wary, although we can do some testing. We can do testing at UBC as well. So we may have to either go out and bring them in physically ourselves by car or go out into the community. Anyway, we have a bit of a double whammy.
All righty. Any questions for Joanne? If not, Christy? Chris Jones?
Our whole study's remote, so the ability to continue with the design as is hasn't really been impacted at all. Unfortunately, we released our app to the first group of users after they finished their baseline surveys about 2 days before pretty much everything shut down. So, you know, we have users using the app, but we've had, I would have to say the engagement with the app for families is understandably a bit lower than some of our beta tests were. You know, I think families are really stressed. And so a lot of people, I think, aren't able to use it in the same way. We have added some items on our follow-up survey to kind of get a sense of how COVID may have impacted families, both just generally stress levels as well as what they think
their level of app usage might have been had it not been COVID, just sort of on their normal routine. So that'll give us a sense. Our Android development, we are, Cristiano got pulled into some really amazing COVID projects for our hospital and designed some really fantastic things for our community and other types of projects. So we pushed the Android back a little bit so that he could prioritize his efforts on that. So that is about ready, and we'll start kind of another group of families on that. We should still be pretty much on time for our RCT. It's just interpreting our data within the context of COVID. We'll kind of get a sense of that.
Yeah, so. Potentially starting a little bit later with the Android can tell us if COVID actually impacted our initial what we started with the iOS a couple of months ago.
Okay. Scott, how are things going with you? And I don't know whether you saw the University of Houston now has this thing on marijuana and alcohol causing brain defects in fetuses. They have a project going there now.
I saw that. That was really interesting. UNC is actually about to open on Monday to 50% research capacity. So each floor in each building can have 50% of its normal occupancy. So we are starting to open up. We're also in a much smaller city than most of the rest of you. So I think we can do that. I think that they're going to open up some limited human subjects research as well. So we're starting to gear up. I am in the process of writing a detailed plan of who's going to be in the lab at what time. We're going to work in shifts, essentially. So an entire floor of a building has to work in a shifts from like 6 to 2, and then the other half can work from 2 to 6 or whatever. With the ideal that if one person in one shift comes down with COVID, they'll just isolate the entire shift of that floor and hopefully quarantine things. In the meantime, I'm writing a paper with Johan's lab. So we'll have a paper coming or submitted soon on with fish and mice looking at the same gene. And we're seeing overlapping things in the mice and fish.
It was just a zebrafish article on folic acid.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, that it prevents developmental defects in zebrafish.
We've been thinking about, I did see that, that's right. Because we've been thinking about doing that because we have, as part of our HIV drug study that was just funded last year, we have mice in the lab that are on high and low folate diets for this HIV drug. We've been thinking about extending it to more alcohol studies too.
So Ed and Scott, I just wanted to mention the grant with UH is actually a multi-PI grant that is with a really talented engineer and myself. So it's a joint one. It just got started last month. And he does some really amazing whole animal imaging type of things. He develops microscopy methods and software for that type of thing, high resolution imaging. And so at some point in time, I'd love to talk to Scott and Johan about maybe a four-way collaboration. But his microscopes are amazing. They're like these huge optical benches, which are tiny little animal at one end. Anyway, I'm looking forward to starting that.
Well, congratulations on that too.
Yes, congratulations.
Okay, Jeff Wozniak, anything exciting going on?
Well, we are applying. I applied last week to so-called Sunrise, some of our lab and some of our projects. Probably the imaging will be later in line. Our choline study may be sooner. We actually have people on study who need to be seen. So that may happen sometime in June. CFAST related, I have one paper that did a concept proposal for was resubmitted. So that one has been reviewed and is in its second round. That's on subcortical relationships with emotional functioning in the CFAST 4 population. And then we have another one that's just getting ready to go out this week on hippocampal subfield volumes and cognitive functioning in CFAST population. So making some progress on publications.
Well, that's good. You know, people have this time now, so that's what I'm suggesting all students is write and write, write. So get stuff out.
Yes.
All right. Tina?
Yeah, so in Ukraine, things are still the same. We were supposed to be there this week, and obviously we're not. So they're still on a complete hold until such time as we hear differently, but keeping on top of that. As far as here in San Diego, Ken didn't mention it, but the Rady Children's Hospital is, as of this month, has reopened for inpatient and outpatient clinical research, so we can restart the collecting of blood samples for the research resource as long as the patients will come in. So I don't know the answer to that question, whether they will or not, but it's possible from the institution standpoint. And from our standpoint, as of June 1st, we can bring back up to 25% of our research staff, and we're the entire campus is going on a daily symptom tracker. Before you show up to work, you have to complete this thing. And we're, unlike the Cal State system, the plan is to bring back all our students in the fall. So there's a, you know, active program to try to implement routine and regular testing and monitoring and tracing of any positive cases. We have, in the meantime, Rajesh's student, Nihal, has submitted a paper, and I'll turn in the submission thing for that today, on sex differences in the work that she did for her master's thesis. And Gretchen Vandely has submitted a paper to ACER looking at the applying the dysmorphology score that Phil uses for weighting of minor malformations to the Ukraine data to look at how that relates to predicting outcomes. And that went into ACER. And Julie Cable and Todd Coleman have been working on a couple of papers on the cardiac orienting response, which are pretty much ready to be submitted.
Good deal. The Tories?
Hey, so our children's hospital recently implemented a three-phase recovery plan. So right now, so we are in phase 0.5. So only essential workers and who involved in the urgent research grant application or paper revision can do some experiments. So only one or two people from each laboratory can do some experiment. And in 2 weeks from now, so they will start phase one. So our target is 25 people can go back to the lab to do research. And then sometime later, so we go to the phase two for 50%, and then phase three for 75% go back to the lab to do research. So yeah, can slow, but the most of our work is right now is the data analysis. So and I do a collaboration about the common genes that have alternative splicing between the gestational diabetes model and also the FASD. And we have some common genes that are changed both from both models. And then we are using the artificial intelligence methods to predict what genes have alternative splicing in these two disorders. And then, so yeah, we are trying to write a paper on this finding. And so we also published recently about the potential drug application of the potassium channel blocker to suppress some of the behavior abnormality from the FFSD mouse model. So, and then so we, our next plan is to develop a real drug that may be applicable for the human patient. So we recently submitted a STTR phase one application at the end of April, and hopefully so they
Good luck on that. They're really good. All right, Sandra, because we only got a couple minutes left and I have to go back to somebody. Sandra?
Yep, I'll be quick. About 3 weeks ago, Tom Blanchard told me that he's working on a manuscript. I have no idea what it's actually about. I'm trying to get that information from him so I can figure out what of his data he's not putting in there to try to pull together a second paper out of that study. In the meantime, I mean, Scott kind of filled you in on UNC. We were very lucky. We're a ways away from them and in a area, so we never actually got completely shut down. We were able to keep our animal behavior testing going because we're doing longitudinal studies there, so that's been really good. And then the lab will be back running on Monday. Even the 50% capacity actually allows most of my lab to get back in there, so that's nice. So what we're on now is still, the cognitive testing at various stages in the lifespan, and then the intervention work with choline and behavior training and various things. So, we're doing.
Thanks, it'd be interesting to see what Tom comes up with. Sarah, I skipped over you because you talked when Bill asked a question, but is there anything else that you want to add in the another minute?
No, we've been busy. We started the work with Mike Suddy on the 3D cameras, and we had some where we can't do anything because we can't see anybody, but we just got in contact with the company to buy the last camera, so that's moving forward. We are working on papers and trying to push some of our online stuff a little bit faster to get that going. So no, I don't have anything much more. Thanks.
All right, we got 3 minutes left, and I'd like to hear from the SAB, Mike Charnest and NIAAA. Any comments, concerns, issues?
No comments or concerns. I think that you've laid out the need to prepare for the next steps by doing some deep thinking about possible collaborations and new directions. And I'd also just remind people that the next best step for a project might be a spinoff. I'm not recommending that for anybody, but it really could, it might serve some projects better. So looking forward to meeting the next time.
Okay, well, that'll be next month. Anyone else from the SAB?
Sure, it's James. Yep. Go ahead, Sarah.
I already talked, I'm done.
Okay, so just quickly, I'd like to remind people of the conversation we had the face-to-face meeting in October, particularly Dr. Koob's comments on the need to translate outputs from the network. So I'd like to hear at some point in the June meetings ideas at either the project or consortium level on what your plans are for the knowledge translation or implementation of research outputs from this collaborative initiative.
That's one of the things I'm looking for in terms of those comments that I'm asking people to think about, not only their own research, but the broad big questions that need to be answered in the field. So I'll remind people to please send me their comments and concerns.
Yeah, Jim, I'm glad you brought that up. I was actually looking on the NIAAA site to see if Koob had articulated those types of priorities someplace, but I think what he said to us face-to-face still stands as a priority.
Michael?
I'm looking forward to the meeting. I think that when everybody gets in one place and focuses on the potential synergies in CFAS, we'll begin to see what emerges as the next phase for CFAS. I can't tell you today what it will look like, but I think that when we have had a chance to really brainstorm together and hear ideas, I think the ideas will be a little bit more apparent. I certainly second what was said, that the translational component of this has to be always on our mind. Even though we're not in the business of clinical care, we have to produce something that ultimately impacts it and makes a difference in diagnosis and intervention. And so we'll keep that in mind as we have our discussions.
Bill, Joe?
Well, for me, Joe has something.
I don't have anything to add. I'm just looking forward to this discussion of the future directions.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. That's why, but I really need people to send me their ideas for their own project as well as big picture type of things. So we can try to organize it and get you some ideas for discussion for that second day of the conference call. So do that. And Tina, don't forget that Hispanic things, data.
Nope, got it on my list.
Thank you very, very much. Any other issues, questions, concerns, whatever? Okie doke. Well, everybody stay safe and be healthy.